The Culture Pop Podcast is brought to you by the Law Offices of Jacob & Ronnie.
Accident or injury, call Jacob & Ronnie. Call Jacob.
Hey, it's Mace. If you or a loved one is injured in any kind of accident, please don't wait. Call Jacob immediately for a free consultation. That's right, free. When an accident happens, it can turn your world upside down. So put the best on your side. Jacob doesn't even get paid unless you win. First name, first thought, first call, Jacob, Jacob, Jacob. After an accident, 24 hours a day, call 844-24-JACOB or visit calljacob.com.
Call Jacob.
Welcome to the world of Culture Pop with Steve Mason and Sue Kowinski. Culture,
comedy, movies, TV, tech, authors, trends,
pop.
This is the Culture Pop Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 15 of the Culture Pop Podcast. It is Thursday, August the 15th. I'm recording this at our ESPN studios at LA Live. I'm Steve Mason. Sue Kowinski will be along in a minute. Sue and I had a chance to talk with actress Judy Greer last week. Judy is one of the ultimate character actresses working today. Her credits include 13 Going on 30, 27 Dresses, The Descendants, Ant-Man, War for the Planet of the Apes, and on and on. Her new movie is Where'd You Go, Bernadette?, where she is co-starring with Cate Blanchett and Billy Crudup. Here is our conversation with Judy Greer. Judy, thanks a lot for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So we'll talk about Where'd You Go, Bernadette, which is a fun movie. But first, I want to get into how you actually became an actor in the first place. Why acting?
Oh, good question. I still don't totally know. Well, I love it now so much. But in fact, when I was starting, I didn't know what else to do. And I went to an acting program for college, but kind of thinking I would end up having to go to grad school to like get a real career or like education really. but I thought like, well, I'm going to try this for a while and audition and see if I get work. And I did. And I just like kind of kept getting work. I felt like acting sort of chose me.
What was your first big break when you knew, Hey, I made it in this business?
I kind of never feel like I've made it, even though I tell myself that I have. I know that I have. But, like, I guess when I didn't have to get any other jobs.
Right.
Like, I could live just as an actor. And that kind of happened, like, pretty quickly after I moved to Los Angeles from Chicago. I was working enough that I could support myself only acting. And then I was like, I'm really doing this. Like, I'm actually doing it.
You know, it's so funny. You know, you hear actors who work all the time say, you know, I don't know if I've really made it, you know. And I go on IMDb. Because, I mean, I know a lot of the stuff that you've done. But I look at all of your work. And do you feel now that, like, it could all go away?
Yeah. I mean, almost now more than ever, because I feel like we're all just, like walking this like sort of social media tightrope, and like I don't know, and there's just so much, everything changed so much, and I don't want to sound like an old lady and boring, but like I don't know, I think like the whole business is changing, and so I always am mindful of like, well, I don't know, like it could get different, or I could, you know, it's like so much of it is about like what your brand is and not always.
Hey, Judy, I'll let you know that my dog Sophie's barking in the background. So just ignore her.
My dog.
He's actually asking
dog
a question.
Mary is sleeping. Sophie. Sophie is being really nice to me right now. I can tell.
So I understand what you're saying as how the business is changing, but I kind of feel like, you know, I for someone like you, I feel like, you know, you've been grandfathered in, you know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to worry about how many followers you have. You don't have to worry whether you're an influencer, you know, because I think that younger people coming up now, they won't even get any attention. Some of them won't even, you know, maybe be considered for things because they don't have a following.
Yeah, and some people get cast in movies and TV shows because of how many followers they have, and maybe they shouldn't. you know, like it goes both ways.
So you think social media is walking a tightrope. Why do you think that?
Well, I think it's tricky because we're supposed to be actors. So we're supposed to be these chameleons who can create characters and portray them. But when your social media presence is just all about you, like, are you ever really able to disappear inside of another person anymore?
Yeah, I remember, you know, I started my career as a stand-up comedian, and years and years ago, they would have showcases for actors, basically. Because actors, if you weren't in something, then a casting person, you know, couldn't come see you. But if you were doing stand-up, they can come to a club any night of the week and see you. And as comedians, we were so pissed off that these, like, you know, these actors would come in. They weren't stand-ups. They just would get stage time just to be seen.
Right.
And it was very, very frustrating for us because it's like, hey, you don't belong here. You don't even do this. You're taking stage time away from real comedians.
You're doing a monologue, lady. I know.
She's really got a bone to pick here. She's very upset. She's very worked up.
I don't blame you. When I tell people, when young or people starting their careers now ask me for advice, I really don't know what to say. The advice that I give people usually is to go take classes at, like, Upright Citizens Brigade or Groundlings or someplace where you can get in a show so that people can come and see you, because I don't know how, otherwise I don't know how you get yourself out there.
So you wrote a book called I Don't Know What You Know Me From, and it seems really appropriate because you've got about 1,000 projects on your IMDb page, and people could know you from anything. Tell me the genesis of the book.
Well, every time I tell the name of my book to, like, other actors, sort of, and, like, supporting actors, people are like, oh my God, that's amazing. I mean, we all kind of joke and we all sort of have the same stories, like the people that, well, I just was so, I'm so always happy to meet fans, but sometimes when they make you tell them, like, all the things you've been in so that they can remember what they know you from, like, it is, it can be a long process and it can be frustrating for both of you. And I just feel like I get that so much. Like, oh my God, I love you, but what are you in? Tell me what I know you from. And I'm like, how would I know what you know me from? Like, listen to the question. But like, I'm not a mind reader, man. But
do people ever get it wrong? Do people ever say, I know you from, and then you weren't in that thing?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, a lot of times people think I was in Bridesmaids and I wasn't, but I think they just, like, assume I would have been. Like, and then one time, though, a guy came up to me in a furniture store and he was crying and he told me that my performance in Magnolia changed his life. And I was not in Magnolia. And so I was like, I just said thank you and let him go on with his day because he was so emotional. And I was like, I don't want to take this away from that guy. Like, he was really worked up over meeting, I think, Melora Walters is probably who he thought I was. And, like, it was moving him to the point of tears in a public place. So I was like, I'm not going to be like, that wasn't me.
Well, it's nice that you let him have his catharsis.
I know. Yeah. But I'm really excited for the day I get to meet Melora Walters and tell her that story.
So I want to test your memory because mine's not altogether clear. I own theaters in Palm Desert.
Oh, mine's terrible.
I own theaters in Palm Desert called Cinemas Palm Door. You came out and did a Q&A for us, and I moderated it. But I do not remember what movie it was from. Do you remember what movie it was from?
Was it Steel Magnolias?
I think that would have... it was Bridesmaids. it was... I think it was probably The Descendants.
Yeah, it was. You're right. It was The Descendants, which is a great movie. And you were delightful at the Q&A.
Thank you. I do give good Q&A. I've been told that.
So you were in the Planet of the Apes movies, which I totally love. And you did two of them.
You
played one of the apes, right?
Yeah, I was Cordelia, the Queen of the Apes, naturally.
And so what's it like acting with all that motion capture, with the little things on your head and your face and all that stuff?
It's like very strange for the first day, and then you just get used to it. It's a little like sometimes there was a few scenes that Andy and I had, Andy Serkis and I, like some tender moments where we're like hugging each other. He's holding me, and like sometimes our like face cameras would bang into each other. But really, like besides some of those awkward moments, like it's really fun, and you really like. I thought it's going to be so hard to lose. Like, I find so much of my character building comes from, like, how I look, like, what the character is wearing and her hair and makeup and everything. So I thought it would be a little harder for me without that. But just from right from the get-go, everyone, we all look the same. So you don't feel like you're standing out, you know? Like, I don't feel like a weirdo on set because that's how we all look. So I don't know. I found it freeing.
So you, you've kissed a lot of hot guys in a lot of shows and movies. Okay. And something that I always wonder, like when you have to like make out with somebody, like how do you know, like do I go for it? Like, you know, do you do tongue right away? Is it like how,
by the way, I gotta tell you, Judy, this is Sue's thing. She asks every guest about this exact thing.
No, I don't.
You're fascinated by this.
Well, I'm always wondering about it.
I know. It is a weird thing. It's weird. I think it, well, every kiss is specific. Everyone is different, you know, like I don't play the kind of roles that like do like serious, like intense, like tongue makeout kissing. Like I don't really like, I also don't like generally like ride in helicopters or like chase people and shoot guns. Like that's just not the kind of roles I get cast in. So usually the kissing is pretty like basic, I would say, but I don't know. I always wonder that. And like when I watch movies sometimes and like, it's a super close up and like, you just see like their tongues everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God, like they really just had to do that. Like you just have to go for it. But your director is supposed to tell you what kind of kiss it is. I mean, you know.
Like so degrees of kissing?
Yes. And I think that, like, in those cases, it's always best to just go for it and get it over with and, like, be shy.
Were you intimidated having to kiss George Clooney?
No, not really. I had worked with him years ago on a movie called Three Kings. If that would have been my first job with him, I'm sure I would have been. But because I'd known him already, it was sort of fun. It was like, it did feel that day, though. It was funny because Alexander Payne, like, no, he's so specific. He knows exactly what he wants. So we don't often, like, do that many takes or even that many setups. And on that day when George kissed me, I swear to God, we just shot that kiss like all day long. And I was like, this is almost feeling like a practical joke that George would have pulled on me. That like the one scene in this movie that we're shooting from like 75 angles and we're just going take after take after take after take is like this kiss scene. I'm like, if I didn't know how much it costs to shoot movies, I would be like, this is fully a George Clooney prank that at like one point everyone's going to laugh and be like, ah, oh, we were wondering how long you would put up with this for.
So you co-starred with Jamie Lee Curtis in the new Halloween movie. And I know there are going to be two more, I think, that are already in production. That became the highest grossing movie with a woman as a lead. How much did the success of that movie surprise you?
Well, it didn't. I guess I should say it didn't really. I mean, yes, like the level of success, I guess, but I knew it was going to be huge. I mean, it's Halloween and people love Halloween. They love Michael Myers. They love that franchise. They love Jamie Lee. And I think like the fact that she was starring in this movie and people knew that was, that's why I wanted to do it. When I read the script and they were like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis is like going to be in it, I was expecting honestly that she was like doing a cameo. You know what I mean? Like that she was like, oh, that's the crazy old lady who goes to Starbucks and screams at everyone every day. And like that would be the role she was playing like in town. And you're like, oh, there she is. But then when I read the script and like she stars in the movie and she kicks all the ass, I was like, this is so cool that that's what they chose to do. That's what Blumhouse and David Gordon Green and Danny McBride, like that they chose to give her the starring role, that she was kicking all the ass, that she was like back with a vengeance. It's just, to me, it was like the coolest thing in the world. And because she did it so well, I guess, yes, numbers are always like, whoa, it made that much money, but But just like the script was so good. Jamie's so awesome. David's amazing. Like, I just thought it would have to be so bad to be bad.
Are you at this point in your career where you don't have to audition for parts?
Oh, no. Actually, I do audition. In fact, I have to put myself on tape for something this weekend. And I've never done that. And I had to, like, oh, you know, in the movie Halloween, the kid who plays Cameron, his name's Dylan Arnold, he lives in my neighborhood. And I was like, you're young. Do you put yourself on tape for stuff? Do you, like, have a light I can borrow? Do you have a tripod I can borrow? He's like, I got you covered. Let me know. I'll bring over my equipment. I'm like, this is how you do it now. I mean, when I was, you know, coming up, like, there wasn't, like, self-tape, but that's kind of the main thing everyone does. And now I'm like, do I need to, like, buy myself a light and a camera or something? Do I need to do that?
So I watched the movie.
You guys.
Yeah, no, believe me, I've put myself on. I've helped other people put themselves on tape. I mean, that's apparently the new audition, right?
Yeah, I know. So I better jump on that bandwagon, I suppose.
So I watched Kidding with Jim Carrey and you, and it is the bleakest and funniest and most depressing and hilarious show on TV. How'd that project come to you?
That I auditioned for. That I kind of old fashioned, like, got the script from my manager and agent, read it. I was like, oh my God. Like, if I don't get the, like, first of all, it felt like it had been written for me. And I thought, like, if I don't get this role, then I'm the worst because it just feels so right. And the words feel so right coming out of my mouth. And I went to my audition and Michelle Gondry was there and Dave Holstein, the creator, was there. Some of the other producers. I did my audition. I got a few notes from Michelle in his very thick French accent that I didn't totally understand, but I did it again. And he just was kind of like, okay. And Dave was shaking his head, like looking at the ground, shaking his head. And I was like, oh my God, this is the worst audition of my life. I actually went to my car. I sat there. I cried because I was like, how could I have messed this up so badly? Like, how? And then I got a call a few hours later that they were sending my tape to Jim Carrey so he could watch it because he had casting approval. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it because I didn't get the vibe. I asked Dave Holstein about it later and I said, why were you shaking your head in my audition? And he was like, I was shaking my head like, I can't believe it. I can't believe we found our girl after all the girls. Like, we finally found her. I can't believe it. And I was like, oh, well, just for future reference, when you're an actor and the showrunner is sitting next to the camera shaking his head, it doesn't feel awesome. And I thought you hated me and you were like, nope, not her. And he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, I know.
It's so funny you're saying this because one of my questions was going to be, have you ever auditioned for something you thought you blew it and you got it? Because I know that feeling so well. But you know what
no.
has there ever been something that you did audition for that you whether you thought you got it or not, or whether you thought you had a great audition and you didn't get it and it really was a little devastating?
Yeah. There was a movie. There's a couple, but there was one a long time ago called Bad Teacher with Cameron Diaz and Justin Timberlake and Lucy Punch. And I remember auditioning for that a couple times and just wanting it like I thought I was so perfect for the role. I wanted it so badly. I couldn't wrap my mind around how I wouldn't get that role. And then I didn't get it. And Lucy Punch got it. And she's amazing in the movie, and I love the movie. But, oh, my heart was so broken. I was so sad. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? Also, because a lot of times they do this weird thing where, like, when you get to a certain level, like they've already auditioned a bunch of people, like, they'll spread out your auditions so that you don't really see the other people. And it's weird because it does this trick with my head where I think I'm like the only person auditioning for the role. Like, I forget there's other people. They just have us spaced out so that we don't have to run into each other. So I'm like, that is like also the second shock when I'm like, when would they have seen another person? Like, there wasn't anyone there. And I'm like, oh, right. Yeah. Duh.
Well,
that one.
well, especially when, you know, because I've auditioned for things and there are times where you go in and there's a lot of other people there and they look so different than you. Like, I remember auditioning for something and most of the women, they look probably 10, 15 years older than me. And I was, you know, we were all playing a mom. And I thought, oh, my God, right. They are really have no idea. I mean, there's no way in the world I'm going to get this part. And I ended up getting it. And it was shocking to me because that kind of plays on your mind, too, a little bit.
I always like that. I always like when the audition, when the waiting room has like so many different people in it, like for my role, that I'm like, okay, cool. It really is like they're just like, they're trying to figure it out. And I figure if I don't get the role because I'm just like such a different type than who they went with, like it makes me feel better. Like it wasn't about acting at that point. It was just about like who's like what type of person they wanted in the role.
So let's talk about Where'd You Go, Bernadette. You're working with Cate Blanchett. You're on a set with Cate Blanchett. That has to be intimidating, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And she is a force and she's so incredible. And I just like immediately fell in love with her. The best part really was rehearsal. That was the most special part. That we had the time to rehearse, and that was the time when I felt like I got to know her a little bit and Billy Crudup a little bit, which I don't want to, I like cannot say enough that I think he's probably just about the best actor out there. And he, unfortunately, I think is so good that he doesn't get the like parade he deserves. I don't know. He's so good. And he's so good in the movie and he's so great to act with in scenes that like, I expected to be blown away by Cate Blanchett and I was, and he was like the great, I just was like, oh my God, he's so wonderful. Like I couldn't believe it. And my big scenes were with him, but the rehearsal process was great because I got to know them a little bit. Once we got on set, it was pretty, serious and focused, and the scene with Cate is so long, and in order to keep it visually interesting, you know, we have to like do a lot of different, like we have to move around the room and do a lot of different setups, and so it was a long couple of days, and I was just like really happy for that time where we were like being silly and hanging out and rehearsing, you know.
When you say that an actor is so good and so good to work with, what is it? What are they giving you that makes you say something like that?
I feel like I believe everything that comes out of their mouth in every different way that they say it. Frank Langella is like that. I mean, Jim's like that. Like, Frank Langella, maybe it's just because he's Frank Langella. Like, I felt the same way with Billy, that, like, they just can't mess up a line. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Maybe they think they do, but it's pretty crazy. And, like, with Billy, like, he's so thoughtful and, in our scene we had together, we were talking about his wife's issues. I just really believed him. I don't know how else to say it. It's probably not an interesting answer, but...
You play a psychiatrist in this, and I will, in a moment of honesty, I will mm-hmm. tell you that I have both a psychiatrist and a psychologist, and I spend a lot of time
there. Busy guy.
Exactly. Sue is in therapy also.
Right.
And we've talked about it on the podcast.
He just outed me.
I am also currently in therapy, and I love it.
What do you get out of it?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to hear someone's take on a situation that doesn't really know me or the people involved. And I don't, like, I, you know, for the stuff I'm talking about, like, I'm trying to sort of solve, like, two kind of specific problems. So it's really helpful to, like, hear it from someone's point of view who's been trained in as, like, a medical professional. You know what I mean? Because, like, my friends could be like, dude, you're, like, better than that. Like, I don't really need it. Like, I have plenty of cheerleaders in my life. Like, I want someone that's really going to say, like, I don't, you know, I think you could handle it like this next time. I don't think, like, this coming at the, you know, coming at it from this angle. Have you thought about this? Like, I just like the perspective. And someone who doesn't really have, like, a horse in the race. Is that what you say? A dog in the fight? But I don't like the idea of dogs fighting, so I don't like that one. But anyway, I find that therapy is really great. I mean, it's really great to get stuff out, to not like necessarily burden everyone you know with things, to see like when, like how you're, you know, obviously so much of it, like the cliches about your parents, but really like kind of learning to reparent yourself and break some habits. Like, I don't know. I think everyone should go to therapy. I wish more people could go to therapy.
Me too. Me too. And it's the same thing. I just want to get somebody else's voice on whatever is going on, because I may think something's going on, and then my partner may be one voice, and I'm like, I want to get a third person in here to say, oh no, here's what I think you're doing. I want to ask you one last thing. The story is about a woman, an architect, who's gone a little crazy because she is not working as a creator, she's not working as an artist anymore. Have you ever thought about what life would be like if you weren't acting, if you lost the ability to be an artist?
I think about it a lot, but I never, I have like, I wouldn't say it's a fantasy, but like I have like my sliding doors life, like where I don't create anymore. And I'm like, oh, and in that life, I would like work at the store, like for my friend and his shop, and I would like cook, and I would be able to have any color hair I wanted. And like, I wonder if I would work out so much. Like, I wonder, like all those things. I just wonder about, I think, because so much of what I do is like wrapped up in what, like actors, like what we look like, you know what I mean? So I always think about that stuff, but I don't really ever think of like my psyche, because I don't imagine I would ever not create something, or that I wouldn't be being creative in some way. But like in Bernadette's case, I mean, when you watch the movie, like you see the house they live in, like it's just a million tiny weird little projects kind of started. Like, she's clearly creating, she's just not fulfilling her needs. And it is, I think, sad when people who need to be making art aren't making art. Like, then you get like, then you get someone like Bernadette, I would imagine.
Well, the movie is called Where'd You Go, Bernadette? It is in theaters everywhere, opening August the 16th. And Judy, you are delightful. Thank you for spending a few minutes.
Thank you guys so much. And thanks for wanting to talk about the movie. I'm really proud of it. It was a highlight working with Richard Linklater. I didn't mention, sorry, that I had written him a letter asking to be in the movie because I love him so much and wanted to work with him so badly. It was a real dream come true. Thanks so much, you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Judy Greer may be the most likable guest we've had on the Culture Pop podcast. That wraps up episode 15 of the podcast with Sue Kalinske and me. I am going on a long European adventure. Going to start out in Dubrovnik in Croatia. That's where King's Landing is. I'm going to do the Game of Thrones tour and then going to Budapest. So we are going on a hiatus. We will be back the week of September 9, so you will have to get along without us till then. Thanks a lot for listening, subscribing, and rating and reviewing. We're off to a really good start with this show, and I'm serious about this, am looking forward to doing this thing for years. Thanks again, and see you in a few weeks.